All right, I'm going to call to order the City Council work session Tuesday, September 9th, 2025. Topics of discussion are first is going back to the interviews for civil legal services attorney interviews. And we'll be starting off today with Evander, is it Gillian? And Miller.
Yes, Gillian.
Gillian and Miller. All right, thanks. Of course, it's Gillian. Is it Gillian? Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, so welcome. Appreciate your time this evening to come and visit with us. Just kind of a little rundown of what to expect. I'll go through all the questions and ask them. That way everyone else can focus on your answers and take notes. They might ask a follow-up question. And then if you have a question on one of our questions and you want me to clarify it, please let me know. There is a sheet in front of you that you can follow along with and read along as well. Otherwise, we'll start with quick introductions.
Ryan Hammond, Mayor.
Chris Riley, City Council.
Kirsten Buescher, City Council.
Shanna Stewart, City Council.
Eric Peters, City Council.
Mike Olson, City Council.
Tim Frankfurth, Captain of the Police Department.
Who's supposed to be City Engineer, Public Works Director.
I'm Usher, Administrative Services Director.
Online, Dan?
Dan Spick, City Council.
All right. Mike, Brian Hagan, City Administrator. So, welcome, and we'll get started right away. So, Mike, please describe your background and of both of you and the firm as a whole that would be assigned to Ramsey.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for inviting us to interview. My name is Cynthia Kirkhoff. I'm an attorney with the Lovander, Gillian & Miller Law Firm. I have with me Greta Yerfisk.
Repeat your name.
Yeah, my name is Greta Bjerknes.
Thank you.
And if we're selected, I would be the primary attorney, and Greta would be the backup. I've been an attorney for 20 years. I have about 14 years of solely municipal experience, meaning that's all I did was work for cities, represented cities. I worked at law firms and also in-house. I worked in the city attorney's office. I was a city attorney at a couple of places. I have a general counsel background, but my interests and specialties are land use and development and employment and labor law. Lovander, Gillian & Miller has been representing cities since 1949. We have a great municipal practice. And I don't want to give away my age, but I counted that we, you know, between me, Greta, and Corey Land, and another attorney at the firm, we have more than 50 years combined experience in municipal representation. We're in Eagan, just off of 494. We're in the metro area. And we do all sorts of things for cities. I represent EDAs, help with code enforcement, help with employment, help with eminent domain, and Greta, that's one of her specialties. She can detail that a little bit more. We help with employment and labor and just the general counsel with SEL work for cities.
Sure. Yeah, so like Cynthia said, my name is Greta Bjerknes. I'm a shareholder at Lovander. Also, I've been there for about 4 years. Prior to my time at Lovander, I was an assistant county attorney in Dakota County, representing their civil division and their public works department, mostly. As Cynthia said, I too am a city attorney at a couple of cities with a specialty. So I'm a generalist city attorney for a few cities, but then I specialize in eminent domain work. So I do that not only for my cities, but all the cities that our firm represents. And I even contract with some other cities and their city attorneys if they're not well-versed in eminent domain. So I help a lot of cities go through that process. And then my experience and my specialty is even a little bit broader in terms of real estate. We can help cities buy and sell real property, easements, I love legal descriptions, dirt law, things like that. I love that kind of thing. So together, we make a really good, well-rounded team.
Awesome.
How will your law firm make Ramsey a priority to meet the terms outlined in the RFP for meeting attendance, response time, the council and staff inquiries, document review turnaround, and office hours?
I'm happy to answer that. I would make Ramsey a priority. I'm recently relocated from Texas to Minnesota. I lived there for a number of years. And I am completely available to help Ramsey. And I'm open to the office hours. I think that's a great idea. I know other cities, city attorneys have done that. The priorities for the projects, I would work with the city staff, the city administrator, to come up with deadlines for different projects to make sure that we're all, you know, meeting your expectations. And I prefer having, if not a monthly, like a quarterly kind of review of things and making sure we're all on track, because some things, you know, take a while for various projects to make sure that, you know, everything's on the right timeline. In terms of office hours, I'm available for office hours. Like I said, it's a great idea. Some cities that I've worked with where it would be a time where you can make an appointment with the city attorney, and that way there's the face-to-face interaction, which I think is really important. I like video calls or video meetings, but I think in-person meetings are great. You can get a lot more done that way. But I'm available for also video meetings as well, if the city staff prefer that, if there's a bigger meeting, things like that. But we're committed to meeting your deadlines and that you set forth in your RFP.
And like Cynthia said, we've been representing cities for decades and decades, so we understand what packet deadline days can be like and what that means to you. So we know that that can be a stressful time. We understand deadlines, and oftentimes we found most successful is when you get a project and you're helping city staff with something. Okay, what's the target date to get this on the agenda, and what does that mean the packet deadline is, and we work our way back so that we are very clear about when things are due, and if that's not doable, then we talk about it then versus, you know, that packet deadline comes around and everyone's disappointed.
You mentioned you're in Edina, correct?
Egan,
sorry. So how would you intend to manage drive time and attend meetings?
Well, again, I'm available to attend your meetings. The drive time would be, in terms of billing, it would be, we would propose that we would be billing from our office in Egan to attend the meetings. City, but in terms of if they're not council meetings, I'm certainly available by phone or video meetings just as well. Okay. Whatever the city prefers.
Right. Flexibility is good. Okay. Do you feel it's appropriate for city staff to draft legal documents such as ordinances, purchase agreements, development agreements? If not, why? And if so, what would be your role to ensure that the city's interests are protected?
What I recommend to cities is that the city attorney draft a template for some of these documents, especially like a vendor agreement or a professional services agreement where we have a template and then the vendor or the professional services company just provides the exhibits. That is what I prefer. I think it's easier, probably cheaper for the city. You're not going back and forth, because a lot of times the vendor will present a contract and then the city attorney has to revise it and then it goes back to the vendor again. I think it saves time to have templates to have for those types of things. Vendor contracts, professional services agreements, ordinances, if it's just like a straightforward, you know, have the template. And I'm happy to draft the ordinance, but the staff would provide the regulations and put them all into the ordinance form and make sure they're, for me, an ordinance is key. I want to make sure it's enforceable. Development agreements, again, I'm of the opinion that if we prepare a template for you and you just, the staff can put the information in, and there may be blanks that are filled in, and it's I think it's easier for developers to know what the form is going to look like. In my experience, they want to know, like, what do they have to do? And if they know they need an exhibit for this, this, and this, it's just so much easier to get it done and get it ready for the agenda.
And describe the most challenging municipal issue you have faced during your legal career. What were the circumstances and what was the outcome?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Because I feel like municipal law, since I started, there's just every year, I feel like there's a new issue. And one of the things that really sticks out for me is I remember when short-term rentals were a thing, when every city that wanted to regulate them, they were trying to figure out what are they going to do with them. And there's so many court cases, there's so many people that have sued cities about short-term rentals, and how you kind of learn as you go along. I mean, it's been a number of years, you know, 10, 15 years, but just like sometimes you can learn off of these new economy things, like how we did it, you know, with this, something that we can't even think of right now is coming on the horizon. Can we use, you know, some solutions that we used for the last one? Can we apply that to the next one? And that's what I find challenging is every legislative year there's new laws that we have to learn. I'm just learning about cannabis right now. But it's just, you know, it's a learning experience to me. I feel like it's always challenging. And that's why I love municipal law, because I have to know federal law, state law, statutory requirements. That's why I love it. I think it's just, it seems like there's always challenges. We have to learn how to pivot and go in the right direction and get feedback from the city to come up with good legal advice.
I would actually say, maybe because it's just really fresh, I would say cannabis has been very challenging as part of my municipal career. Because I was a county attorney for so long, or assistant county attorney for so long, I'm not counting that time, because there were definitely some challenging things there. But with the cannabis law coming out, and I'm sure that you all have experienced this, with it coming out, seemingly coming out before the state was ready, and then the legislative changes made this last session that really threw us all for a loop, and OCM still doesn't know how they want to interpret some of those provisions. We're getting contradictory information from them, which is just incredibly frustrating when we're trying to give you sound legal advice so you can build your ordinances and your practices. So that has been really challenging for me, and like I said, I'm just maybe still suffering from some of the frustration from it, but it is really, it was a big challenge. It is a big challenge.
And if you did not list the monthly retainer as an option, please indicate why not and whether your firm is open to such an agreement.
Do you want to answer this
one? Sure. So I believe we did not propose a monthly retainer option. That does not mean that we won't consider it. We definitely will have that conversation with you if that's something that the city would like. I tend to shy away from retainer agreements in city representation because I've seen in the past in other cities and other attorneys where that are under retainer agreement, the attorney doesn't maybe always do the best work because they know that they're going to get paid, you know, this amount every month, and no matter how much work they do, it's never going to be more than that. So I just think it encourages maybe not, sometimes not the best work, and I know that's a broad sweeping statement that is not always true. And I think it sometimes encourages inefficiencies, you know, if I'm scheduled to be somewhere and you don't really need me there, you know, then I don't think I should have to come, and that isn't always the case if you're under a retainer agreement. So I just tend to shy away from them. That does not mean that we wouldn't do one for Ramsey. It'd be a discussion about what's in it, what's the amount, and that's all.
and please describe all factors that you would consider in regard to advising the city on how to respond to a state agency's non-statutorily defined regulation. What options are available to the city council if they disagree with that regulation? Please provide an example.
I feel like there's something that you were getting at that
yeah.
you just didn't want to say in the question.
We used a very specific example 4 years ago, if that gives any hint.
Say that again, sorry.
We used a very specific example 4 years ago, the last time we did this, of like an executive order or guidelines presented by a state department that statutory law doesn't perfectly
right.
clear out.
Right, like...
clearly defined.
So you're saying that, like, let's say that the new paid leave law, there's regulations that go with it, and there's also some things that are on the website that have regulations that I'm thinking, where are these regulations from? They're not in the where are the statements from on the website? They're not in the regulations. It's like someone made them up. Is that what you're talking about?
A little bit.
Well, I think that my approach to that would be that to respond to the state agency would be to ask them where they're getting their authority to impose that regulation. And if they don't have an authority for that, then the city would make their argument about why they don't want to comply with that requirement. I guess I'm gonna distinguish it between a statute regulation and then the state agency requirement. If they don't have any statutory authority for that, I think there would be, the city would have more authority to not follow it. And Ramsey's a charter city, so you have a lot more power than a statutory city. So there may be things you can do to respond to it. You could use that status as a charter city, so you have more authority than, you know, another city. Have any thoughts on that question? I hope I was clear. I was trying.
And what role would you be responsible for during state legislative session, keeping Ramsey informed of potential law changes that would impact us? And for example, the local zoning control restrictions that are a hot topic in recent years. And then following the session, what role would you be responsible for to ensure that we remain in conformance with state law?
Well, I like to follow the laws that are being introduced, especially the zoning stuff. It really interests me because of my background and as a planner. That kind of stuff. We do keep track of it. We have a good relationship with the League of Minnesota Cities, so we're constantly monitoring the laws that are introduced to see, you know, how far they make it. If they do, you know, they are signed by the governor. Do become law. I have in the past done training on them with, you know, whatever the city wants me to, the city council, the planning commission, or whomever, or just staff, to go over what the new requirements are. I think that's really important to, you know, as a city attorney, to educate, you know, the people that are making the decisions, you know, here's what the law now requires. I enjoy training, and I think that's a really important part of our job, is to make sure that you know what your legal requirements are.
And I think that's a really big strength of our firm, actually, is some of our municipal attorneys are regularly asked to be part of the League of Minnesota Cities, you know, lobbying group, to be at the table when they are talking about the local, the zoning regulation laws. And we, our colleague Corey is usually always physically at that table when they're meeting with the league, and how does this impact these? So we have that. I serve on the legislative committee for the real property section of the bar. The state Senate Minority Leader is an attorney at our law firm. We have a lot of involvement with the legislation, the legislature, and our. It's just a part of our everyday lives during session, and we kind of like that.
Yeah.
And how would you describe the role and relationship the city attorney has with individual council members and then the council as a whole?
That is a great question. The city attorney, in my opinion, represents the council as a whole, as a body, because the council can only act as a body. The city attorney is there to give advice to the council as a whole. That doesn't mean that, if a council member has a question that they can't contact the city attorney. There are some city attorneys that will provide that answer that's given to that one council member to the city administrator or the city manager. So the city manager is kept in the loop about what question was asked and what the answer was, so everyone knows what's going on, what was asked. I like to keep everyone updated on things, and I think that's really important, that if I'm asked a question that, at least the city administration knows about it, if not, the rest of the council, just so everyone's kept on the same page.
Do you have any concerns with the terms outlined in the RFP?
No, we don't.
Okay. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any questions for us?
What are some of the challenges that you see, for the city attorney position? Like, what are some of the things that the past city attorney has worked on, or things that need to be changed? Just kind of give us an idea about that.
I'll note just kind of one a little bit more unique to Ramsey and some other cities, but we're a fairly large developer in town. We own a number of acres in our downtown area through tax forfeiture, and it's in a large TIF district, so that's something that we're very involved with, from real estate transactions, trying to find businesses to move to town, working TIF deals. Now that's coming to an end here. Next November is the deadline to actually award any type of TIF incentive. Another item we have coming, which shouldn't be too difficult, but we own a number of properties along Highway 10 through the RALP program with that council. Now that the Highway 10 project is coming to a close, we'll be turning around looking to sell about a dozen or so properties. So that will present some redevelopment opportunities, we hope. Other than that, we've got a fairly stable staff, so we don't have a ton of personnel issues, but we have 115 plus full-time employees, so it can come up. The attorney, historically, we've had the city attorney also represent the charter. Charter's not super active. We meet the once a year to say we didn't really do anything. Recently, we did do some more housekeeping items from a charter that was enacted back in the 70s and bring it to today's time frame. So, but at the same time, kind of some of the questions allude to, Ramsey's not necessarily a city that's just going to accept fate. There are times where we'd be willing to challenge something or at least ask some more questions back to a higher agency. Everyone's has the comp plan coming. We've received notice that we get to up the density tier, so that could present some challenges on how we implement that and what we choose to do with it. And we don't have a lot of land left to develop, but there's enough where it would be a recognizable impact potentially. So, Council, am I missing anything from your guys' perspective?
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd add is we're a very diverse city in the sense of we have everything from agricultural land all the way down to the TIF district. So we have quite a few scenarios that we run through. So I'm sure if you're representing multiple cities, you probably have some that are more rural and some that are more urban. So probably nothing too new for you, but it is interesting. We have quite the wide variety here just in one city alone. So there's no shortage of new things that pop up.
Anything else?
Okay.
Mention something online here?
Yes, Dan.
I think another thing that that'll be facing us soon, we currently don't have a contract in place with the county for the elections and pool pads. There's been a lot of discussion, at least from residents, not necessarily from the council, of, you know, do we want to stay with electronic pool pads or go to paper? Who is the authority, the county or the city? And so we're going to have to rework that contract and then kind of figure out some of those questions. So that might be something that we'd, you know, need legal assistance with.
I see in your clients' conflicts of interest, one of the cities that you list, is you say you do something with Anoka, so that's our next-door neighbor. You say it's not a conflict, but what do you do for them? Or
right now, I am assisting the city of Anoka with a very kind of high-profile land use application, so I'm assisting their full-time city attorney with that specific issue, so it's limited to that, and it is of probably a finite duration of time, which is probably going to be ended in fairly soon because it's on the council agenda for next week or 2 weeks. And if that were to go on to litigation, that would likely be tendered over to the league for defense, and that would not be me. So by the time, if we were able to get your contract, that would likely.
Yeah, we do have a few more minutes. Anything else you want to share?
I think we would love to work with the city of Ramsey. Levander is a really great firm. We've been doing municipal law, like Cynthia said, for decades and decades and decades, and we've got loads of experience, and this is a really good chance, I'm going to be honest, for you all to get in sort of with Cynthia kind of on the ground floor, moving back from Texas. I mean, she has more municipal experience than I do. You would be well taken care of by Cynthia, and when she is not available, that's where me and the rest of our municipal lawyers come in. We have a full team, and even beyond our municipal lawyers, we have litigators, we have real estate practitioners, we're real estate specialists. So as a whole, we're a really great option for cities as your city attorney.
Awesome.
I would echo that I would be the main point of contact, but I have really good people behind me. We have an attorney that does data practices. We have Corey Land, who has been an attorney for municipal attorney for 30 years. We have Greta that does the real estate, and yeah, I would be the conduit. But we have really good people at the firm, and I've only been there for a few months, and they're really nice people.
That
is hard to find, like really nice attorneys that. They all want everyone to succeed. They like the city clients. We all want to help the city clients. We want to get the item on your agenda. We want to make sure it looks nice. There's no typos in it. It's all ready to go. I mean, that's really what the point of city attorney is to help you comply with legal requirements. And if the council has to approve something, we need to get it ready to go. And that's, you know, like Greta said earlier, sometimes there's a rush to get the agenda done, but it's so satisfying. Okay, the agenda's posted, and everything looks great in it. And it's all going to get approved. So that's what I love about it.
That's our life every other Thursday.
Councilmember Busher.
Like when referring to compliance, how willing are you to push back or at least share your opinions on if we are requesting something of you that would leave us open to litigation or potentially is not a good idea? I would do something like that.
You know, one of the things I just want to point out is if I can give you options for taking action, I will. Like, if it's very clear that statute says you have to do this, that's one thing. But if there's options, I would give you options. Maybe, like, there, you know, could go from 1 to 3, high-risk option, all the way to the low-risk option. But you would be given options for it. And the city attorney is here to give you legal advice. And if it's strictly a policy decision, it's a policy decision. I wouldn't get involved in that. If you ask me a legal question about it, I'll answer it, but I'm not going to get involved in, you know, how you should zone something. And that's the council's decision. But I'm very, had to do that and make, you know, difficult conversations about how something needs to be done, or it's very clear in the law, or it's, you know, if the law's not so clear. Just give the council or the staff options about how to proceed is how I operate.
And you'll find attorneys, city attorneys with differing kind of opinions on that and approaches on that, and I'm like Cynthia, where I very much respect the fact that your neighbors elected you to make decisions. So and they didn't elect me. So if you ask us to do something for you and I think, is that questionable? I will say, that's questionable, and here's your risk in moving forward, or here's your risk in not moving forward, or, you know, and everything in between there. So some attorneys, just, if they don't agree with it, they won't want to do it for you, and that's fine, but that's not the approach that we take.
Yep.
Cool.
Welcome. And we thank you both for coming. And they shared that they're waiting on a third, but traffic probably wasn't nice to them. So
sure.
They might sneak in. But just kind of what to expect. I'll ask all the questions. That way others can focus on your answers and take notes. There may be a follow-up question here and there. And if you need to clarify anything, please let me know. Otherwise, we'll start with some introductions.
Ryan Heineman, Mayor.
Chris Riley, City Council.
Kirsten Buescher, City Council.
Shanna Stewart, City Council.
Eric Peters, City Council.
Okay. Mike Olson, City Council.
Tim Frankfurth, Captain of the Police Department.
Bruce Westby, City Engineer, Public Works Director.
Colleen Lesher, Administrative Services Director.
Online.
Dan Spank, City Council.
All right.
Great. And I'm Robert Scott. This is David Asaf. We're both attorneys at Flaherty and Hood on our Civil Legal Services team. Our third member today, if he makes it through the traffic, will be Chad Arneson. He's also on the same practice team at the firm.
Awesome.
What did you say your name was again? I'm sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, so I'm David Asaf. I'm an associate with the municipal group there with Robert and Chris.
Thank you.
And with that, let's jump in and why don't you just go a little bit more into detail on your background and how the firm will help Ramsey.
Absolutely. I'll start with the firm introduction first. The firm was founded in 1992. by Tim Flaherty. At the time, Tim had a governmental relations practice that he brought to the new firm. That means he was lobbying. He lobbied for city governments and throughout the state and coalitions of city governments on issues that were important to cities. That's how the firm began. Obviously, we have experienced consistent growth over the years to the point where we will be welcoming our 20th attorney to the team next week. About half of our firm's practice is still lobbying focused, again, almost exclusively for city governments and city interests. The other half now is kind of a broad-based municipal legal practice. We have eight full-time city attorneys that work for cities throughout the state. We represent over 30 city governments and other local units of government as city attorneys or general counsel. We also have some specialized practice areas in our firm that a lot of firms can't match, which would be our environmental and regulatory practice, helping our cities deal with the Pollution Control Agency, Department of Natural Resources, Department of Health, a variety of permitting and other environmental issues. Full labor and employment practice with four dedicated attorneys representing cities on public labor and employment issues, personnel issues. But the biggest growth in our firm on the legal side is just on our municipal team. That's where David and I both work. I've been with the firm for going on 18 years. I have 20 years of experience, but with the 18 years at Flaherty and Hood, what I do every day is represent city governments. I'm the main city attorney for the city of Wilmer and city of New Ulm. I help with lots of other cities that our firm represents. And I'll let David introduce himself too.
And so as you said, I'm an associate with the municipal group, so similar, you know, represent cities, variety of civil matters every day from cities, including some that sort of directly to me, and then others that sort of work with Robert and some of the cities he, you know, represents more directly. So I started working in sort of local government sort of law when I was in law school, interned with the city and kind of kept with it from that. And, you know, one of the things that brought me to Flaherty and Hood is the sort of the specialty groups, I think. I mean, having that sort of labor team that you can kind of direct things to, some of the regulatory matters. So, you know, as I was sort of looking around at places to go, it was, you know, I think one of the benefits there, and it's sort of helped out me in my early career.
And so one of the things about our firm, I think we represent cities with similar profiles to Ramsey. We represent a lot of cities that are charter cities and regional centers, similar populations. Presumably similar complexity of legal issues. We also represent cities that are throughout greater Minnesota that are much smaller, that in their own way present their own challenges and give us additional experience dealing with staff that maybe aren't quite as professionally sophisticated as a city like Ramsey probably has. But we work in a lot of environments, and the thing I'd say is that we really like what we do. We really value the relationships we build with city staff and the cities we represent. And I think that shows.
How will your firm make Ramsey a priority and meet the terms outlined in the RFP for meeting attendance, response time for inquiries, document review turnaround, and office hours?
Well, I guess I would just say, I think if you look at our proposal and our client list, it's apparent just by the way the firm began that we have kind of a focus in greater Minnesota. We all live in the Twin Cities. We would love to work for cities that are a little closer. So it would be a huge priority for us to gain a city like Ramsey and do your work and do it well. As far as meeting response times, it is a huge priority in our firm among all of our staff to be responsive to our clients. I think that is something you would hear from our clients that we have represented for a long time. You should never, with the number of attorneys we have, even if, you know, I might be tied up for something, you will not have difficulty getting a hold of someone in our firm that's experienced and will know how to handle an issue that comes up if it has some urgency.
Do you want to check outside and see if the third showed up?
We can see people walk by.
Never know who it is.
Rambo.
Hold on a second.
Sorry, you can continue. I just wanted to give you a chance in case they showed up. But
I think I was just saying that it's instilled in all of our attorneys that being responsive is important.
Awesome.
We have kind of a policy that if someone is to call us, we're supposed to return the call within 4 hours. Obviously, a lot of communication these days is primarily by email. You should get a response the same day, even if it's just acknowledge that we have it. We're going to have to look into it, but to coordinate response times, it's, I think, a focus of our firm.
So you are generally located locally, but if your firm's not located locally, and more or less are, how would you intend to manage drive time and attend the meetings?
We will make whatever meetings you want us to make. We're all in the Twin Cities. Ironically, I think their third attorney, who must be having some traffic problems, lives the closest to you in Circle Pines, so we'll have to figure out what's going on there. But, I mean, obviously, serving the clients that we do statewide, we're no strangers to getting in our car and getting to a meeting. I personally go to the city council meetings in Wilmer most of the time, so it's usually twice a month I'm heading out there. So coming to Ramsey will be no problem at all. Let's get out there quicker.
You're looking for a DMV?
Yeah, I know. That's where I'm like.
No. I picked a number.
There is traffic problems.
I don't know who that is. He's going to help. Do you feel it's appropriate for city staff to draft legal documents such as ordinances, purchase agreements, development agreements? If not, why? And if so, what is your role to ensure that the city's interests are protected?
I think it can be in the circumstances. One of the things that we do is we will give you... there he is.
Hello.
Welcome.
Council members, I apologize.
That's okay, no problem.
We have a small, some blame to share with the road construction, so apologies.
No.
One of the things you'll see is that we will provide templates of a lot of agreements we use over and over. We always give that with a bit of caution. Every case is a little different. I guess we would appreciate the opportunity to review most contracts, because what we always want to avoid is... assuming you're going to have us review your agenda packets before each meeting, finding something in the agenda packet that isn't drafted correctly or that presents some legal risk for the city that we hadn't been involved in or we hadn't been had the opportunity to catch ahead of time and address in your in the contract before it hits the packet. So I think as long as we have a kind of trusting relationship about how important legal documents like contracts, ordinances are going to be prepared before they hit the agenda packet. That's, I guess, how we prefer to operate.
Chad, maybe for everyone's benefit, we'll kind of jump back, and if you could share your background and experience and what you'd bring to help assist Ramsey.
Certainly. So, greetings, everyone. My name is Chad Armisen, attorney with Flaherty & Hood. I've been an attorney with Flaherty & Hood for, well, if we talk collectively, approximately a year and a handful of months. I worked for Flaherty & Hood back in 2022. Then went to go work for the federal government overseas for a federal agency in South Korea. I did that for a few years and decided I missed Flaherty & Hood so much I decided to come back. My experience is primarily in litigation. What I can certainly do for the city of Ramsey is I can bring a wealth of experience for public service. Through the duration of my career as an attorney, I have worked on the local level, the state level, and the federal level. Local level, certainly with Flaherty & Hood, state level as a judge advocate officer for the Minnesota Army National Guard, which is simply being an attorney for a state agency, and then being an attorney advisor for the United States federal government. Minnesota native, born in South Korea, but grown up in Minnesota, have stayed here my entire life. my connection to the city of Ramsey well. We certainly love our neighbors, and I live over pretty close over in Circle Pines. So a little bit about myself.
Thank you.
Describe the most challenging municipal issue you have faced during your legal career. What were the circumstances?
One that probably we each have one we can share, but yeah. One quickly that jumps to mind was a city came to us. We were not their city attorney at the time the issue was created, but we were when the issue needed to be resolved. But they had approved a plat, a development on a lake in their community, and they had done so, and the plat did not comply with the shoreline regulations that the DNR mandates every city enforce. It seems there was a miscommunication between the DNR and the city about the classification for the type of lake that the development bordered. So the city did not apply the most restrictive standards that they were supposed to, which meant every platted lot was not in compliance, was out of compliance with the minimum lot size requirement. At the time it came to us, the property had changed hands from the original developer who platted the property. Many of the lots had been constructed upon, but I think the majority were still vacant. And the property had gone to the financing party through foreclosure. And at that point, the bank that owned the property had significant financial investment in the site, obviously, and had a bunch of lots that could not be built upon without variances, and the DNR would not tolerate or allow the city to grant variances that would allow the lots to become buildable. So we were in litigation. The city had, in fact, granted some variances. The DNR sued, and our approach was basically to try and mount whatever defense we could for the city, pushing back both on the DNR and also applying pressure on the bank to compromise. And essentially what that meant is allow the convince the bank to pursue a planned unit development that would involve the city acquiring some additional property to bring the total lot coverage per unit down to a level that DNR would accept. I think managing both sides, we were able to do that and get a decent outcome for the city involving the planned unit development. I think everybody had to compromise. Certainly the bank wasn't able to develop it to the fullest extent that they had hoped, but they got enough out of it that it was worth their while to cooperate with the city and the resolution we proposed. That's one fairly memorable situation. I don't know if you guys have anything.
So I would, not to piggyback off of litigation, but certainly litigation is probably one of the most stressful things to begin with, so I guess we'll just continue on with litigation. So in my first year with Flaherty, I was handed a duty disability case for a police officer that unfortunately was very much injured in the line of duty. We certainly, you know, support police officers, but when we identify a problem with the Public Employees Retirement Association, essentially rubber stamping, a lot of these duty disability cases, and cities are left footing the bill for insurance premiums until those officers are the age of 65. Those cities are starting to look at hundreds of thousands of dollars that they hadn't initially accounted for. So we've certainly, quite a bit of experience with the duty disability cases. However, we did discover one for one particular case in which an officer had been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, but also some manic depressive issues. Certainly very serious. However, when we started to dig into the case, we had noticed that, once again, the issue was PERA had essentially, we had determined, kind of rubber stamped it, didn't really take a good look at what exactly this officer had been diagnosed with. We had our experts take a look into it, basically drawing on my background as a litigation attorney. Determined that PTSD was indeed an issue, but the issue that was really at the heart of the case that made this officer essentially potentially permanently disabled was the manic depressive issue. We dug in on it, and we ended up getting one of the very first, I guess, I hate to call it a victory, but for a lack of a better word for purposes of litigation, one of the very first victories in the state of Minnesota on those duty disability cases on behalf of the city. which really required PRA to take another step back and take a better look at the type of work they were doing and determining their officers to be disabled.
Yeah, and I'm not going to jump in on a sort of single issue. I think if you ask me in a year, there's probably a couple of people working on that. I hate to answer this question, but, for about the last year, I've been the sort of go-to in the firm for any of the cannabis issues. So that's been a lot of sort of what I've been working on recently with, different cities with different goals and plans for their sort of drafting ordinances, now responding to businesses coming in and sort of navigating now some, threats of litigation for certain businesses coming in. So that's been kind of ongoing for the past sort of 8 months, I guess, now starting to ramp up a bit.
If you did not list the monthly retainer as an option, please indicate why not and whether your firm would be open for the agreement.
I think we quoted just hourly rates. That doesn't mean we would not consider a monthly retainer. I think we would need to have some pretty serious discussions about what your expectations are for services, probably look at what you're budgeting for services. Certainly we're open to whatever works for both of us. Obviously we would need an amount that would cover what we're asked to provide on a monthly basis. But we have done that. We do have one of our larger city clients. We do represent them on a monthly retainer, so we do have some experience on how to structure that.
This is a little bit of a lengthy one, but please describe all factors that you would consider in regard to advising the city on how to respond to a state agency's non-statutorily defined regulation. What options are available to the city council if they disagree with those regulations? Please provide an example.
A fairly significant part of our practice is standing up for our city clients to state agencies. I'll give you one example. We had a smaller city that operates its own wastewater treatment facility, and the Pollution Control Agency decided that it needed to give them a very restrictive discharge limitation on their effluent once they clean the wastewater that they treat at the plant when they discharge to the water body by their community. It was, we determined pretty quickly, completely arbitrary. There is no science to support the limit that they wanted to impose. The agency shifted its justification for the limit on numbers of occasions. Never seemed to make sense. It was just one of these, the agency staff had, I think, made an error originally in a calculation, and instead of acknowledging it and correcting it and giving the city something that made sense, they dug in. So we obviously explored every avenue we could. We were unable through numerous meetings with agency staff to convince them that they made an error and they need to adjust their permit terms. So what we had to do was sue them in the Court of Appeals after they issued the permit through the Administrative Procedures Act. We had a very, very complicated scientific-based argument to make. We made it successfully. One of the few times, not the only time I'm aware of, that the city was able to essentially have the Court of Appeals vacate a permit that the agency had issued. And when we got that opinion, that meant that the previous permit without the restrictive limit was restored. So it was a huge victory for the city. It meant millions of dollars in investments in their plant that would have been unnecessary that they were not forced to make. That's one example. I mean, there's lots of examples with probably just about every agency you might be dealing with.
What role would you be responsible for during the state legislative session in keeping Ramsey informed of potential law changes that would impact us? For example, the local zoning authority ones. And then following the legislative session, what role would you be responsible for to ensure Ramsey remains in conformance with state law?
Well, I think my answer to a lot of these questions will be we will assume whatever role you would like us to. But I will say on the issue of emerging legislation. I think our firm does have the advantage that we do have nearly half of our practice devoted to lobbying on city issues. So we will be aware when things are moving through the legislature. On the example you just gave with the attempts to restrict local zoning control, that was something our team was working on. They would come up for a 10-minute chat as proposals were made and revisions to language were proposed to see if it works. So I mean, we're in the loop on this as it's happening, and obviously we'll know if something passes. We'll probably likely be involved just as a firm in trying to lobby on the city side of these issues before it becomes law, hoping that problematic bills like that do not become law. And if they do, we'll be the first to know. And obviously, if there's something that impacts our city plants, we make a habit of just reaching out. We'll draft an email, we'll send it to everybody we represent. We did that recently. They made some changes to the open meeting law, making remote meeting attendance a little easier. And when we that passed, we sent an email out to everyone, all of our clients, letting them know what the change was, inviting them to have us come out and explain. But that's pretty typical. I think we're in the loop on all of this, and you'll hear from us if something passes.
How would you describe the role and relationship the city attorney has with individual city council members and then the council as a whole?
As attorneys representing the city of Ramsey, we would be representing the municipal corporation. The corporation acts through the board council. We don't represent individual council members or staff members in their individual capacities, but everyone has a role to play. So we have to interact, we have to give good advice to the council. We occasionally, I believe, is appropriate for us to give advice to individual council members just on how to bring an issue forward. Having said that, we will structure our representation however the city would like us to. We have some cities where, as a kind of cost control measure, they don't want city council members contacting us directly. They want everything to come through the city administrator. The administrator will determine if there's something that we need to be brought in on. We have other cities where they've got an actual monthly budget allotment for us to spend time advising individual council members. Whenever we are talking to an individual council member, it's in the capacity of we represent the corporation and we are trying to help facilitate how the organization operates. So if that didn't make sense, it's not that different than when the city administrator or city staff or department head comes to us and says, all right, there's what we want to do. We have an issue we need to address. We need an ordinance or an amendment of an existing ordinance that we'd like to bring forward to the council. When we get involved, it's to try and understand what the city's or what the city staff's priority is, draft a document that's going to address those concerns, do it in a legal way, obviously, and understanding that it's something that's going to go to council for approval. We have to have strong relationships really at every level of your organization. And I think everyone has to understand that when you're talking to us, you're not talking to us as, you know, we're not your personal advocates, we're the advocates for the city. And I think, you know, we've done this for a long time. I think we have a good feel for that. And I think we have that relationship, that understanding with elected officials, with staff members in all of our cities.
Do you have any concerns with the terms outlined in the RFP?
I reviewed the RFP. I had no concerns. I thought it looked, honestly, it looked like the kind of work that we do every day. All of us have to-do lists that look very similar to the bullet list that you had of the services you're looking for, so no.
Did you have any questions for us?
One of the things I would always be interested in understanding is just how you have used legal services, what your expectations are. As much as the work is very similar, I think, across our municipal clients, the kind of the culture and the expectations and the extent to which you involve the attorney changes. And obviously that's something that you guys control. It's not something that we can dictate to you. So one question would just be, is the expectation of the city, it did look like it in the RFP, that you have a city attorney physically present at every meeting? And if that's the case, certainly it's not a problem. We, you know, we're available those nights. We have attorneys who will attend. And then the other question would just be how you kind of structure the communications with our firm. And I'll just offer, I would expect that a city of your size that we'd probably be working directly with, at least at the department director level, each of your department directors. But again, not every city is the same way. And yeah. So how do you see it from your side?
Yeah, so we do ask the attorney to be present at virtually all the meetings. Tonight is a very typical meeting where we do a work session for about an hour and a half before a regular meeting. We have had the attorney present at both. We understand that there's times where meetings need to get changed because of holidays, what have you, and you know, generally we hope someone can be there for us from the firm, but if not, we understand. As far as communication goes, you know, you kind of touched on it earlier. We have over 100 employees. We have well-educated, highly experienced employees, so we do draft a lot of the documents ourselves, kind of put Ramsey's spin on it, but at the same time, we send every legal document to the attorney to get the blessing, make sure that everything's in there. You know, and from my perspective, I want your guys' input on what you've seen work in other cities. You know, what are we missing? We have a lot of experience with staff, but we haven't experienced everything. So if there's something that could be added, we want to hear that. Communication, like I said, you know, department heads and some other key staff, it's not uncommon to reach out directly. Generally, I'm informed of what those conversations are. Depending on if it's retainer or hourly, that could adjust slightly. But at the same time, we, from a staff perspective, we want to make sure that we're not putting the city in a bad spot, bringing something forward for council to approve. And if you guys do see something, we want to hear it. We're not going to take offense to, you know, saying you guys are crazy. You shouldn't be putting that in the language or agreeing to those terms. So, yeah.
That sounds great. I mean, we represent as many cities as we do. We see lots of different examples, and we have some cities that prefer to operate a little more independently, in which case it's just where we need to intervene if there's something that we see in their packet that's a really big deal. But that's not our preference. I mean, we will serve you in whatever way that you prefer. But I think what you're describing makes a lot of sense and is closer to what we prefer. So.
Any other questions?
Sounds like a question for the three of you. Who would be the one that would be regularly attending, or would it just rotate?
I think at this point, I would say I would probably be the most likely to attend your meetings, and I would be the person that we'd probably designate as the main contact. But I would just say we, you know, with the team we have a very collaborative approach. And part of that is just, you know, we want the attorney who has the best experience on whatever the issue is that's come up to be working for you on that issue. So I will be relying heavily on our team and making sure that the right person is involved, depending on, you know, the nature of the issue.
Any other questions? Councilmember Busher.
Twofold. So you said that you guys would prefer to be more involved and more active and kind of give and offer opinions. And as Brian said, we're willing to listen to if we are crazy, right? So if you hear something and you have concerns, how willing are you to find ways to make it work and like kind of offer risk assessments? And then as you get to know us as a council and as a city, how willing are you to start looking into specific things that we do and be willing to maybe like fight or push back against state policies or regulations that are like potentially harming our city or something that maybe we just don't feel directly aligns with our city?
Yeah, I think those are good questions and a couple thoughts on them. On the first issue, I mean, I think just with our level of experience, and you know, I've been doing this more or less for 18 years, and I have a pretty good feel when there's something that needs intervention and how to bring it up and who to go to and how to frame it. But the other part of this is, I mean, part of our job is to be problem solvers, not just, you know, sticklers. And we will answer questions like, okay, well, you've, you know, flagged an issue. We're not quite doing it technically correct. What's the risk? We'll answer that for you. And we understand that, you know, it's not about us. The council sets the policy. Your staff will do the best to carry that out. And our role is to be an advisor. You know, it's hard to answer this one in a hypothetical context, you know, without something, you know, specific and concrete.
What about the mask mandate? If we had said that we didn't want that anymore, what would you do?
If the city is directing us, the council's position is to push back on a state agency, we will advocate for the city. We will advocate for the position the city has taken. And I think we have a record of doing that on a variety of issues with a variety of agencies on behalf of our clients.
Awesome. Any other questions? Very quick.
That's all we have for this
evening. I will just thank you all for the opportunity to interview. I certainly enjoyed it. And apologies for the difficulty with us all getting here. But
okay. No problem. No problem. A lot of road construction out there.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service. I understand there's a number of veterans on council.
Yeah,
we got a couple.
Yeah, thank you.
Of time, let's. That was kind of indicated. Or my goal was to have that as number four on the agenda. We're going to come back after we do a quick last review of our prelim budget. We should have a relatively quick discussion on a potential EDA vacancy, and then I think to give it enough time, we plan to reconvene it in the regular session to go through interviews.
Sounds good.
My goal is to bring forward a contract at the next council to consider.
So, item number two, final 2026 budget/levy review before preliminary adoption on 9/23/2025.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. The handout that I just gave you is the updated HRA core fund cash flow. Because at the last meeting, it had been requested about what is the future capital request. So we're currently in the process of our 2026 to 2035 capital improvement plan. So all the capital that has been requested then for 26 through 35 is incorporated within, if you look at it, says capital request, the 28 to 30, it should say 27 to 30, excuse me on that one. And then the items that have been as part of the 26 budget to get the 6.5 COLA are listed under the projected 26. So you can see in regards to the capital requests from where they're coming in, it would put the HRA core fund in a negative balance. If you look at where it says the fund balance in yellow, that would be the ending balance just based off of estimates as of today. And so this does include then under for 27, 28, and 29, it doesn't, 28, 29, and 30, that does include the $3 million aerial truck also. So this is, these will not stay within the core fund because as we go through the capital and that as part of the budget in future years, then this will be looked at for the needs of the capital items that are on there. This is just what they're requesting as part of the capital improvement plan at this time, kind of that holding document. But it kind of was just to give you a picture to show you that there is more requests than there was funding in regards to this fund. And then, I don't know if there's questions on this.
Councilmember Ryan.
So under revenues, the land write down, so it's a positive. So this is land that was written down in the past, and you're assuming it's going to get backed off. Is that right?
So what this represents is we had about $12 million that was related to the land purchase price and the assessments that were wrote down. So then as land has been, so that was set up as a land held for resale account. So then as land purchase or land sales were made, that decreased that $12 million. So this represents the balance that's remaining in that account. Subtracting off what we have, like there's the core trust bank and that sort of thing is netted out against this also. This was based off the numbers that John had given me in regards to what is still out there that's going to happen for land sales. But if you know it in the blue down way far below, I do not have, it's a little over $4 million in estimate in land sale cost that is still for areas that do not have a buyer right now, and I noted some of those. So that is not included in here because that is strictly just a rough thing as of right now.
Diana, to confirm, if we sell the land, then this bold number, that will go, you know, 2033 may not have an amount there as we...
Yes, as we sell, and actually that number in 33 will be going away because we have, from the time that I had booked this, we had the sale of Chipotle and that sort of thing, and Taco Bell, $900,000. So we would actually be up to the 2032 line. But that sale would go up and fall on the next line.
So, yeah, and I guess maybe my big picture question is, a couple weeks ago we were talking about how are we going to spend all the money that we thought we were going to have, and now we're projecting negatives. So what changed between a couple weeks ago and now?
Because as of prior to it, I only had the 27... I had the 26 to bring it to the 6.5%, and I had the 27 capital request, and I had 28. I did not have 29 through 35 on there for capital. And also the capital request that came in from what's coming in on the CIP was greater in 27 and 28 than what I had originally had on there. This is strictly just to show you the capital that is out there. It's not to say that it won't be part of the general fund levy request for property tax. It's just to show you that this is the amount that is possible capital.
So this isn't... This is showing if we spend money on these sort of things, that's how it affects...
Yes, this is strictly the capital purchases because they're kind of the one-time only and not operational. So it was kind of asked... What is the capital that's out there for the next 10 years?
Yeah. So we can look at the revenues as not safe, but decent projections, and the expenditures, we do have controls over those, whether we decide to realize that debt or not.
Yeah.
I.e., we don't have to do the fire truck out of this expense account, and then that's going to be a difference of $3 million.
Correct. The DIP 14 obligations were getting paid off in a sense that we were finally starting to see recognizable balances reimbursing our own internal loans.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And that's what we were showing there a couple weeks ago. We didn't book a bunch of future expenses against this fund. And that's what caused the fund balance to go up year over year by about that $1 million. So
yeah.
We were showing that this is a reasonable fund to plan for about $1 million a year in the future to help offset like a capital expense. But just to kind of give a picture looking out over the next 10 years, that's generally what we're anticipating to have to spend per year on capital purchases of equipment. So not a perfect answer to helping offset those future costs, but it does help a considerable amount.
So if we were to take the capital expense that we can use the HRA fund and move them all to the HRA fund, this is how it affects the budget?
Yep. This and on the capital, we'll every year we look at a 10-year capital improvement plan, and then on that, with through the budget process, we approve a very specific capital improvement plan just for the next year. So that 10-year plan is ever changing. You know, we hope it's relatively accurate, but you know, a piece of equipment may shift here and there a year or two. But it gives us a good outlook to help do these fund balance projections.
Does that answer your question, Chris?
It does. No, absolutely it does. And I guess I'll kind of say, I mean, although nobody wants to see negative numbers, I think this is kind of good news that at least we're showing how we think we can pay for these. And we know that these are conservative numbers because we'll hopefully have some more development. So I don't think this is the end of the world. And as you were saying, we'll make different decisions going along.
Right.
If the money's not available, we'd have to figure out something else. But.
Right.
Because if I could add one thing. So if you look at the 27 capital, there's a total of $2.81 million right now that's proposed for 27. That most likely is not going to happen as part of the budget discussion. But that's the number that's booked in here for right now. Mm-hmm. So it's just, again, it's just a holding.
So yeah, just a guess. Okay. Does this answer the questions that the council had? Dan, you're small. I don't see you anymore. You're good?
Yes.
Any other questions about what this fund would pay for over time if we choose to use it for these type of expenses? Nope. You nailed it.
Okay, and I will be bringing those fund policies back to you. But there was another question that was asked at the last council meeting, and it was in regards to the levy of the other cities. So it was about Andover and Lionel Lakes. So this was their response. Andover is basically using about $500,000 worth of their fund balance, and so they're just looking at, we're going to spend it with the expectation that we will make it back in excess of revenue over expenditures during year 2026. That's how they're budgeting. And Lionel Lakes is, the majority of theirs pertains to staffing. And it mostly is in relation to they did have a public safety department where the police and fire were combined together. Now they are separating them out. And so this is what she listed. So I'll go really quick. A 3% COLA plus 4% market rate adjustment for police, 3% COLA plus 6% market rate adjustment for non-police staff at the end of 24, the two-year union contract was settled for 25-26. In addition to above, police wages were increased 4% for officer wages on step 4 and higher, and the sergeant wages increased 2% for all steps. Two patrol officer positions will be transitioned into sergeant. Two sergeants will be transitioned into lieutenant. One additional patrol officer was approved for 26, so they will have a total of 29 officers. A police officer hiring bonus was approved, estimated at $10,000 to $12,000. One full-time firefighter administrative position was added. The full-time fire lieutenant position was upgraded to a lead. Four-time fire lieutenant positions were added. Part-time firefighter hours were increased in offering health insurance benefits that those that qualify. And I know they also issued about, they have a $400,000 additional debt levy related to roads. They bonded at the beginning of August.
That was Lionel Lake?
Yes.
Any questions on that follow-up? Because those are the two lowest, right? Was that
no, the it was the lowest and the highest.
Andover was the lowest and Lionel Lake was the highest.
Yes. So.
Makes sense. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Easy peasy.
So you will see it on your on the next meeting for the preliminary adoption.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. Item number 3, before we take a pause to deliberate in civil legal services, item number 3 is discuss
pending vacancy on the EDA.
All right. This case is with regard to notice that we received that EDA member William McLennan desires to resign his current seat on the EDA. One caveat I want to point out right away is that he thinks his term ends on March 31st, 2026. It actually ends on March 31st, 2027. He had indicated in his letter of resignation that he would be willing to hold on if needed. But that's, again, that he thinks it goes through to March 31st of 2026. But as you'll recall, when we did these boards and commission recruitments, there was another candidate. Her name was Nicole Rudak. It is now Nicole Bauer. There was lengthy discussion with the City Council whether to put her on a partial term on the Planning Commission or to put her on the EDA. Both were partial terms. Ultimately, she was appointed to the Planning Commission. Given this notice from Mr. McLennan, we recalled that conversation and reached out to Ms. Bauer, and she was really excited to hear about the opportunity to serve on the EDA, very much wants to be considered for that again, and is also willing to continue her seat on the Planning Commission until the next annual recruitment, which would help to not have a vacancy then on the Planning Commission as well. So with that, looking for consensus by City Council, if you so desire, to appoint her to relieve Mr. McLennan's seat to serve the EDA through March 31st, 2027, and to continue her term on the Planning Commission through March 31st, 2026.
For those who don't remember, Nicole was the BMO Harris. She's also on the Anoka Area Chamber of Commerce Board. You guys remember her? Just want to make sure we remember the face of the name. How does that sound?
Mm-hmm.
She'd make a good member. Shannon, did you have an opinion?
We've got this coming up again for in what, 6 months? 7 months? Right? We're doing
the next terms.
The
so
next
we
terms.
Advertise January, February, we interview in March, and new terms begin April 1st of 2026.
And I realized that she really wanted the EDA more than she wanted Planning Commission. But does this, like if McKellen, Bill is going to stay until then, wouldn't it be just better to like reopen up the interviews for the EDA? Or?
I'm sorry, maybe I didn't mean to interrupt you, but just to clarify, in his email he said something to the effect of, if there's a replacement, I would be more than happy to give it up sooner.
Yeah, I think her chamber experience would be an asset. And if Bill served quite a while, right? I think a few years at least. Mm-hmm. I think we should respect his decision to step down. And if there's a suitable replacement, it's okay for me. Be good? Well, at least for most of us, consensus at least. Okay.
One quick question, Mr. Mayor. Do we have a long list of people wanting to be on planning? Like, if we replace, do you think we should keep her on both, or is there a long list of people dying to get on planning as well that we could backfill that with?
Councilmember Speck, I can answer that question for you. We don't have any available candidates waiting or currently. Nobody has passed the interview process that would be waiting, and there are no applications on file, even though it has remained open.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be fine with keeping on both. She's a big, great asset to the city.
Awesome. All right, so for the interest of time, we'll go ahead and what's the term I'm looking here?
We will recess the
recess,
work session.
That's it. Yep.
And reconvene it immediately following the regular session this evening.
Perfect. That's exactly what I'm going to say. Thank you.
We need to leave our.
I would suggest bringing all of the proposals with you, just beta, private data until. Sorry, Dan.
Oh, Dan.
Hey, Brian, do I pause this since you guys are coming back or just stop it?
You can stop it. That's fine. Yeah, we'll bring them with because of private data.